2092. Mr. Whitcroft, sworn in.
Madam Chair and Committee, my name, for the record, my name is Raleigh Whitcroft. I'm Chief of Staff of the Oregon Treasury. And with me is our Attorney General Representative Cynthia Burns. And should you want any detailed information on the bill and, you know, why it's structured the way it is, she can answer those questions. Briefly, what House Bill 2092 does is addresses a problem with ORTDF. ORTDF is a fund that was designed to do early-stage venture capital investment in the state of Oregon. It had moved from a public fund into a quasi-private fund with administrative, with legislative approval, I think, two or three sessions ago. Subsequently, and it's a very successful fund, I might want to add also, they've done about 50 investments and are doing the job that they were chartered to do by the legislature. They were advised that the legal opinions that had directed them for the past decade and allowed them to hold stock were in fact not right, that they were in jeopardy because of holding stock. Let me just back off 1 second and say, a venture capital fund, how they work is they will make investments in businesses at a very early stage. The businesses grow, and when the businesses become public and offer stock, that is the exit strategy. That's how the venture capital fund gets its money out of the fund. There needs to be some mechanism, there's some device for them to get money out of the fund. If they can't hold stock, if they can't have the stock that gets them out of the fund, they can't make the profit to dump that profit back into the fund so they can continue to invest in startup businesses and small business in the state of Oregon. So they had a problem. ORTDF, the Attorney General's Office, the board of ORTDF, and the outside money manager that was managing the funds for ORTDF and the Treasury sat down and tried to come up with a solution to the problem. The solution to the problem is the bill that is before you. It's been approved unanimously through the House and Senate, and it, I think, had an inadvertent referral to Ways and Means, because early in the process there was a discussion of who should, when we're talking about options for managing ORTDF, one of the options was that it would come under the Treasury. We didn't think that was the proper option, but if it did come under the Treasury, there was a cost to that, and we had discussed that cost. And the remnant of that discussion, I think, is what got it referred down here. The solution that we came up with will have zero fiscal impact. All of the costs for doing business will be paid for out of the fund itself. There will be no fiscal impact on the state, and I think everybody understands. That's how we've ultimately structured this bill. So I think that's just really how it works, and if you have any questions, and without going into the detail of the bill, I'm more than happy to answer those, or if you want us to go ahead to detail the bill, we're happy to do that too. And I have my certifiably bright person sitting next to me.
Do you have any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hartshorn?
I just want to say I'm quite familiar with ORTDF in my private side as a consultant in agricultural matters, where I've met with their board and with John Ballou, and I tell you, this is a remarkable operation. I believe it was put together by, or during Neil Goldschmidt's administration, was it not?
Yes, sir.
And one of the things I like about it is that one of their charges is that they shall invest in Oregon's natural resource economy, and as a result, they've had some good startups relating to agriculture and natural resources, but not limited to that. They do high tech, and I know now they're doing some remarkable things up at OHSU, and I certainly would encourage the committee to pass this out.
Madam Chair, Representative Hunter?
Sure. Thank you. Just a question. When you say small businesses, can you define small businesses for me? What are you talking about in dollars and cents?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, these are really start-up businesses, and as the definitions of the bill, and that would be on page 2, line 8. And small business means an enterprise engaged in manufacturing, a firm with its principal place of business in Oregon having 200 or fewer employees, and all other business enterprises or firms having 50 or fewer employees. So it's small. You're talking in terms of dollars. Now, these are our truly early stage startup business, and it's where we felt that the legislature felt, you know, a number of years ago that the capital infusion was needed.
Well, primarily manufacturing is the emphasis, is that correct?
Madam Chair.
And civil service.
Okay. Correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing and go into a work session. Any recommendations?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill really does not have any significant fiscal impact. The only potential fiscal impact might be some contracting relationships that might arise. Therefore, there is no real need for this bill to be here. And my recommendation is that the subcommittee move this to full with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
So moved. Any objections?
I'd like to declare a possible or a potential conflict of interest someday. I hope to be doing some business with him.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I need a carrier to the full committee. And on the House.
Sure. Oh, I love it.
Madam Chairman, I haven't read the bill, obviously. On page 4, section 5, beginning line 21, purpose of the ORTDF development account is to earn returns for the education endowment fund by making investments in small businesses, including but not limited to investments and so forth. So, do I read that to believe that all of the earnings are going to go into the education endowment fund?
Raleigh can probably answer that better than I can,
sure.
But the intent is to use the fund as the vehicle for this.
Receiving the earnings.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Thanks.
We're going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 677.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate Bill 677 is a bill that would appropriate $8 million to the College of Veterinary Medicine at Oregon State University for purposes of allowing that college to offer a full program at the Corvallis site. The only material that I've distributed for you today related to this bill is a one-page printout of a web page from the College of Veterinary Medicine that describes how the system is working currently. Currently, if you look at that, at the second paragraph there, you see that under the current course of study, students begin their study at Oregon State University, but then through a cooperative agreement with Washington State University in Pullman, they transfer there for their second and part of their third year of study, eventually returning back to OSU to complete their third year and to finish their fourth year of their veterinary program. This bill would provide, again, $8 million, which would increase the budget for the college by approximately 53% from its current levels to allow all of the coursework to be taken at the Oregon State University campus.
Senator Ferriola.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ted Ferrioli. I represent Senate District 28. Senate Bill 677 is a bill that I hope that you'll be able to look with favor upon. I have a short story to tell, and then I'll defer to the folks that have come to testify about this bill, but I think it's a very interesting story. Senate Bill 677 would appropriate $8 million from the General Fund of the Department of Higher Education to fund a four-year veterinary medical program at the College of Veterinary Medicine at Oregon State University. And the purpose of that is actually to create a four-year school where today we actually have a school that is the only one of its kind in the nation. And let me explain my comment. Annually, the state of Oregon sends $2.1 million to Washington State University for its second and third year students. This breaks down to $35,000 per Oregon student that we're exporting, which is about $12,600 more than Washington State University charges for its own non-resident veterinary medical students. At the present time, OSU is the only program in the nation whose students are required to enroll in another university to finish their education in their specialties. OSU students relocate to Washington State University between their first and second years and back to OSU near the end of their third year. Approximately half the students live at Washington State University at any given time. And these relocations obviously are very disruptive to students. It increases their debt load. It's disruptive to families. Veterinary medical students tend to be folks that are in a specialty that's very much sought after in all the western states. And by moving these folks around, I think we're creating two situations. One, again, is very disruptive to the students. And another is I think that Oregon, if we had the facilities, could better invest these dollars in our own college campus, in our own veterinary medical school, in our own program, in our own students and citizens. I just think this is a situation that needs to be addressed. We know that investments in higher education tend to pay dividends that are disproportionately high. So investing in the technology and creating these skills in Oregon students and in creating a program where we don't have a disruptive midterm influence that causes folks to be relocated would be a lot better use of our dollars, use of the students' tuition dollars, and lots less disruptive. Just from a very selfish perspective, I want these Oregon students to live in Oregon, work in Oregon, pay Oregon taxes, find their careers in Oregon, spend their rent dollars in Oregon, their transportation dollars in Oregon, and help build Oregon communities. So I guess you could say that's a pretty selfish objective. For my own purposes, the veterinary medical school graduates will serve the Ag Natural Resources community in for large and small animal services, and anything that I can do to build the infrastructure that provides services and support to rural communities, especially the natural resource production community, I will do. So I'd like to see us take a good hard look at fully funding the Oregon State University College of Veterinary Medicine, because I think it's a good investment in Oregon's future. Now, I'll try to answer any questions, but I have a rather impressive pantheon of witnesses that have come today to tell you their own stories and perhaps put in a better perspective than I can.
Any questions for Senator Farrell? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Dean Wilford?
Good morning. My name is Robert C. Wilson. I'm the Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine at Oregon State University. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about the Oregon State College of Veterinary Medicine and to present to you some of our ideas concerning the advantages of why we should move to a four-year program. The College of Veterinary Medicine at Oregon State University is one of 27 veterinary medical colleges in the United States, and is only one of three west of the Rocky Mountains. The college was founded after two manpower studies within Oregon found that we needed between 30 and 42 new veterinarians each year just to maintain the status quo. In the 1970s, when these studies were done, it was determined that of Oregon students who applied to veterinary colleges outside of the state, only 10 students were being accepted. With these facts in mind, the legislature came together and decided to act to ensure that there'd be an adequate supply of veterinarians for Oregon and to guarantee that Oregon's young people would have the opportunity to fulfill their lifelong ambitions of becoming veterinarians. Thus, the birth of the college was due to a legislative initiative. In the early 1970s, Dr. Ed Redman, who was then head of the Department of Veterinary Medicine at Oregon State University, estimated that it would cost at least $25 million for the state to build an entire veterinary medicine medical complex from the ground up. Because this money was not available, a regional program was developed with the University of Idaho and Washington State University. The program was known and is known as the WOI, W-O-I, Regional Program in Veterinary Medicine. The regional program applied for a federal grant, and upon receipt of these fundings, buildings were built in Pullman, Washington, Caldwell, Idaho, and Corvallis, Oregon. Our first class matriculated in 1979 and graduated in 1983. This class is and was similar to those that have followed, in that these students had an average of 5 years of college prior to coming to veterinary college, had a grade point average of better than 3.5 on a 4-point scale. They were older than the average students and had already incurred fairly significant student-related debt. Each year, our college accepts 36 students. 28 of these students come from the state of Oregon, and 8 students come from out of state. The Oregon students come from an applicant pool of approximately 115 students, while the out-of-state pool is from a number of students of approximately 800. Since its inception, the program has not changed. Idaho students receive their full 4 years of education at Pullman, Washington, alongside the Washington State students. Oregon students, on the other hand, spend their first year at Corvallis, the second and three quarters of their third year at Pullman, and then move back to Corvallis for the completion of their final fourth year and the rest of their third year. Washington and Idaho students do not come to Oregon. The only students who choose an elective program in productive medicine, animal medicine, will even go to Caldwell, Idaho. So the students, all students spend most of their time at Washington State University. This bill would increase the college budget by about $4 million on an annual basis, and it would allow for most of the educational process to be completed in Corvallis. There are several critical issues which I think should be discussed. The first issue has to do with student welfare. Our college is unique, as Senator Ferrioli has mentioned, in the United States, and in that we ask our students to do something that no other veterinary medical student in the world has to do, and that is to pick up and move his family or her family twice during their education. The move is not only disruptive to the educational process, but it also causes upset family relationships, presents a considerable financial burden, and causes, in some cases, extreme personal stress. The move increases student debt. On the average, our students will owe approximately $60,000 at time of graduation. Some of our students will have debts exceeding $120,000. For a profession with starting salaries in the mid-$30,000 range, this is a great cause for concern. The cost of the two moves, the setting up of two households, is expensive and could be eliminated with the passage of Senate Bill 677. Because of the move, there's less interaction between classes. Students miss a very important part of their education. When our freshmen arrive, the only other class in attendance is the senior class. And each student, the senior students, are busy with clinics and preceptorships. There is no sophomore or junior class. Thus, the freshmen must discover professional habits without the benefit of upper class mentorship. The senior class never gets to know the sophomore class, and there's no corporate memory between succeeding classes. Thus, students spend their professional college years as transients and the learning opportunities that should occur simply do not. Because of the move, students do not have the opportunity to gain leadership experience and to move through the ranks of organized student veterinary medical organizations. To paraphrase from the comments of a student from the class of 1999, pursuing a degree in veterinary medicine involves not only a commitment to 4 years of education, but should also include experience in student organizations, making contact with the profession at large, and networking with other classes. The program of veterinary education that currently exists at OSU College of Veterinary Medicine is analogous to one-year term limits. There is no continuity for these students. The second issue has to do with programmatic concerns. Our curriculum is dictated by the curriculum at Washington State University. The sequencing of our course materials, emphasis on areas of study, and the introduction of innovative teaching methodologies are all dependent upon being able to prepare our students to merge with the Washington State University students. Because we do not have a small animal program in Corvallis, our students complete a 12-week clinical program at Washington State. They then must return to Oregon State and complete their didactic classroom courses over the next 2.5 months. This quarter is called by the students as the killer quarter. Since I've been dean, I have tried to get that terminology changed simply because it doesn't connotate a good learning experience. But this is the feeling that the students have after having been working in the clinics to come back to Oregon State and have to spend the next 2.5 months behind a desk taking notes from, in many cases, 8 to 5 o'clock. This is contrary to the continuing learning experience that is necessary in clinical medicine. While there is a difference between large and small animals in their actual diseases, the experience that you gain in clinical medicine does move from one species to another. To interrupt this is not a good experience for the students. It's also possible for an Oregon State University student to not have treated a dog or a cat or other small animal for 14 months prior to graduation. Now, this often does not happen because our students have preceptorship where they can go out and work in private practices. But this is a situation that, in fact, I was talking with a student yesterday that she was concerned about the small amount of small animal practice that she's had in the last 14 months of her education. Each year, some of our top prospects for admission to Oregon State University elect to matriculate at other colleges of veterinary medicine. This year, we reached an all-time high in that we lost 5 native Oregonians this year to other veterinary colleges. The reason that these students give us is the move. Loss of these superior students to programs in other states is a situation which really should not occur. Our students will spend more time at Washington State University than they do on our own campus. The outcome of this situation is mixed alumni loyalty, the development of business and professional contacts within Washington, friendships and marriages with Washington students, which keep our graduates from returning to Oregon. Currently, about 10% of our students end up in private practice in the state of Washington, while open positions within our state are filled by graduates of other veterinary colleges, or in some cases, they're not filled at all. Another problem that we have that's programmatic is that it's difficult for us to recruit faculty due to the limited size and nature of our program. Faculty in some specialties, such as anesthesiology, clinical pathology, radiology, and others, must make a career choice when they come to Oregon State University due to the lack of a program in small animal medicine and surgery. Our small faculty numbers also limits the research interactions between these faculties and is considered a detriment by many of the prospective faculty members. There's also a hidden or indirect cost to the Oregon program. Since the Warrior Regional Program was founded, there have been additional investments from federal and state sources of better than $60 million in the Washington State University program. These monies have been invested in new buildings, advanced diagnostic equipment, and an innovative educational program. The federal grants were possible because of the complete academic program in Pullman and the substantial numbers of faculty members available to support these programs. Since the inception of the Roy Regional Program in Veterinary Medicine, there has been no further federal support of either the Idaho or the Oregon program. We simply cannot compete with the other 26 veterinary colleges for these dollars. The College of Veterinary Medicine commitment to public service is our third issue. We have two service units within our college, the Large Animal Teaching Hospital and our Veterinary Medical Diagnostic Laboratories. Both of these units provide quality service to the residents of Oregon. There are, however, other services which the college could provide if we had the additional resources found in a four-year program. For example, we would have a program in small animal medicine and surgery, which could provide information and limited service to clients and veterinarians alike. We would have additional faculty members with expertise in areas like parasitology, pharmacology, immunology, microbiology, virology, neurology, toxicology, poultry disease, public health, food safety, and epidemiology. All of these specialties could begin new initiatives within the state of Oregon to improve the health and well-being of our animal patients. The fourth issue is improving research productivity to meet the needs of Oregon agriculture. Since its inception, the college has lacked the critical mass of research scientists needed to perform cutting-edge research in the science. This has led to an inability to speak to various constituent problems. Today's research groups are interdisciplinary and made up of teams of scientists working together on specific programs. I would involve that a principal selection criteria in hiring new faculty would be the expectation of promise of the ability to establish a productive research program and the ability to obtain significant extramural research support. The extramural research support would be used for salaries of technicians, graduate students, and postdoctoral fellows. Existing programs in areas like mastitis therapy, large animal surgery, bioremediation, camelid studies, nutrition, and the investigation of new viral pathogens could be enhanced. With an adequate faculty number, the college can and will begin to solve additional problems of concern to Oregon producers. Along the same lines of research, the College of Veterinary Medicine enjoys full accreditation by the Council on Education of the American Veterinary Medical Association. However, our last two periods of accreditation were for 2 years and for 3 years, when a normal period of accreditation is 7 years. The reasons for the reduced period of accreditation is lack of performance in the Council's expectation for research activity and graduate education. Essential number 11 of the essential requirements of an accredited College of Veterinary Medicine states that the college shall demonstrate substantial research activity. Due to the small number of academic faculty that we have and the fact that they are limited to few areas of expertise, we have a continual struggle to maintain the expectations of our professional standards. The four-year program with the additional faculty and staff would solve this continual problem. The fifth issue is a financial consideration. Each year, approximately $2.1 million flows from Oregon to Washington. This money includes student tuition payments, WICHE payments, and the Oregon State University contribution to the educational cost of Washington State University. In addition, using the conservative figure of $13,000 spent each year by a student in the community for food, shelter, and living expenses, an additional $1 million moves from Oregon to Washington. Thus, if we are investing over $3 million each year in the Washington state economy. If you go back to a point and look at the $60 million that has been invested in the state of Washington with new programs, and you look at our cost of $3 million and the fact that our program has been around for 20 years, guess where the money has come from? It has come indirectly from Oregon taxpayers. the cost of our purchased education from Washington State University increases by approximately $35,000 each year. This has gone on for the 3 years that I've been present in Corvallis and before then. Looking at this from another perspective, we are sending one additional job each year to the state of Washington. The Warri Regional Program is not even a good bargain. As a yearly cost for an Oregon student is $6,378 more per year than the cost for any other veterinary medical student at any other veterinary college. The highest cost for veterinary medical education for an out-of-state student is at Colorado State University. We pay $6,300 more to educate a student at Washington State. Filling the needs of Oregon is also a concern. The legislature initiated the college because there's a demand for providing Oregon residents the opportunity to pursue veterinary careers and to meet the needs for veterinarians in Oregon. Since July 1st, 1998, we have been notified of 70 open positions for veterinarians in Oregon alone. It's not unusual for our graduating seniors to have four or five job offers at graduation. By educating our students in Oregon, we will begin to see a trend towards filling Oregon veterinary positions with Oregon students. Senate Bill 677 would not increase our class size because our facilities were designed for only 36 students. To increase the class size to a total of more than 40 students would require either additional facility construction or separation of the class into two or more sections. Increasing the numbers of class sections would increase the cost and staffing numbers above the limits provided by the bill. A small animal primary care teaching facility would be needed in the Corvallis area to complete the educational experience for our students and to maintain full accreditation. But the bill will not fund a small animal referral teaching hospital. There's a distinction between these two. The primary care facility is a facility like most of us would take our small animals to. The referral hospital would cost $15 to $30 million to build and would increase the numbers of faculty by 10 to 15. This is not something that Oregon State needs to have. In fact, many of the veterinary small animal veterinary colleges across the country are finding that these small animal referral practices have become financial albatrosses simply because the increased numbers of veterinary specialists across the states are basically taking client patients away from them. However, our students would still need to spend approximately 12 weeks in an extramural practice. This extramural practice would be a referral practice. There are private referral practices in Portland and throughout the state of Oregon. There would also be opportunities for our students to spend some of these 12 weeks at other veterinary colleges across the country. So the package that the Senate Bill 677 would fund would allow us to have the primary care facility, and we would not be required to have an external referral practice. In conclusion, I believe that passage of this bill would produce a College of Veterinary Medicine which would significantly enhance the delivery of public service to the people of our state. It would help to maintain the supply of veterinarians needed for Oregon. And I believe that Oregon State University's College of Veterinary Medicine should become a leader in veterinary medical education. That completes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions if I could.
Senator Herson?
Dean, thank you for your testimony, and thank you for the good work that you've done there. Senator Cho and I have followed this closely since we were in the legislature at the time, and the Wiki partnership was a good way to start. In fact, it's the only way we're going to get in the vet business, and I really do support 677 as a way, the next step to more further serve the needs. I can tell you there are needs. My family and I have had horses for 50 years, and we pay a lot of money, like to Representative Kurt Schrader back there. And vets are in demand, particularly the small animals. But my main interest at this point, of course, is to continue what you're doing, large animals. But if 677 was passed, would you be able to do really extensive, intensive research on E. coli, for instance, the deadly bacteria or virus, whatever it is?
We at Oregon State College have a very unique facility called the Veterinary Medical Animal Isolation Unit, which is a unit that is designed for work with highly infectious agents. It's a P3-type facility with the highest containment level that you see in places like Plum Island off the coast of New York is a P4. Only P4 facilities can work with foreign animal disease. The facility we have would be an excellent place to do those kinds of research. Within our Senate Bill 677, I would anticipate an additional 35 new faculty members. One of the emphasis of these faculty members would be a group of scientists who would be able to utilize the animal isolation unit to its maximum capabilities. That would suggest that we would have microbiologists, bacteriologists, and virologists in a fairly large number. One of the things that produces a quality research program is to hire 3 or 4 individuals within the same specialty so that you have a colleague that you can discuss issues with and you can work cooperatively together. So my answer to the question is yes, it would allow us to work on E. coli, the special E. coli 01577 or whatever that number is, that is of concern to human public health. I mentioned other specialties of public health and epidemiology that the college would be looking for because we would need to teach these areas to the students. And so we would have the type of faculty we would need to pursue those specific types of educational and research questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
If I may make one or more comments, I realize that the College of Veterinary Medicine in Bill 677 is outside of the general university request for increased funding through the new funding model. I feel it is my obligation to, in fact, my duty, and I'm very pleased to say that the college strongly supports the higher education budget. We think that this is necessary to improve the quality of higher education in the state of Oregon. It would have some improved qualities and hopefully some spin outs for the College of Veterinary Medicine, but having seen the general condition of some of the other colleges on OSU's campus, I would encourage support of that bill because the university system in this state is in dire need of being able to compete with their peer universities. So that would be a small commercial that does not relate to veterinary medicine, but I think it's important for the state.
So the budget model will not impact your particular program?
The budget model, I don't know at this point what impact it will have on the College of Veterinary Medicine. It will impact the college in some way, but it will not move the college to a 4-year program. So we're looking at 2 specifically different issues.
Thank you, Dean. Very fine presentation, and I think you make the case abundantly clear that these kinds of changes are needed. And I'm wondering, as you make the case on the campus itself, are there plans down the road to do this? Is the bill something we need, or is it possible that this can be done over time through the new model with the institution making this a priority?
That's a difficult question for me to answer, and I really don't have the answer because I'm not sure at this time how the university will look particularly at the new funding model. The new funding model, as I looked at it, as it came out and was presented to the legislature with the dollar figure for the cost of educating a veterinary medical student, added to the student tuition cost. If there was no tariff running from that bill, and if that bill was fully funded, and those dollars came directly to the veterinary college, it would come very close to meeting the requirements for a 4-year program. I think the funding for a veterinary medical student was estimated at $38,000 with an additional $10,000 approximately for tuition or $48,000 per student. By moving the program to Oregon State and by eliminating out-of-state veterinary medical students, which the new funding model would not pay for, that would allow us to have 144 students. The additional income that would derive from the college would be about $3.6 million. Within Oregon State University, we've not seen at this point exactly what the transfer from the funding model, fully funded funding model, to the college will be. And that has been discussed at some time, and the only thing I know is that I've been told that quit thinking about the $38,000 because it may not be exactly what the college gets. So I don't know, but if it came directly to the college, there's no tariff placed on it, we stopped taking out-of-state students, then we would be very close to being able to self-fund it. That would also presuppose that there was no limit on the numbers of students that we could take at the college, or that would be funded to the college.
How many students are currently enrolled?
We have 36 per class, so a total of 144 students.
Madam Chair.
Terry Gordon.
I'm wondering if Grattan Sarens, Mr. Sarens, has any additional information about the impact of the budget model on the School of Veterinary Medicine. That would be helpful to this discussion.
We have Marilyn Lemire, our Vice Chancellor.
Great.
Thank you. So we will have her come up. Any other questions?
So, depending on how the new funding model affected you, would a lesser amount than the $8 million make it possible for you to move in this direction, or is it kind of all or nothing? It's not worth doing unless you get the entire $8
million? It's pretty much all or nothing. We work in a very tenuous environment, and as a dean, I have been walking a tightrope, occasionally slipping off and maintaining good relationships with Washington State University. In the history of the veterinary college, some of you will remember the college was scheduled for closure. This upset our colleagues at Washington State because they look at us as a source of income to support their program. So there was question about that. We did not make the governor's budget, and we were funded, again, by the graciousness of the legislature through the lottery funding for two bienniums. This was not a secure feeling for Washington State. 2 years ago, we talked about the four-year program. This upset Washington State once more. Senator Ferriolis and Senator Fisher's bill have, again, brought that to their mind that Oregon is getting anxious to maybe become a full-grown child of its own, and that I have talked with the dean at Washington State University, and he's talked with his president, their chancellor, and they are looking at options to have a program without Oregon State in existence. So I have talked to them at one time about doing this on a piece-by-piece basis, and they're not interested in that. They expect an all-or-none package, and it's really an all-package plus, a little more each year.
Thank you for being here, and again, thank you for your presentation. You have made a strong case.
All right, thank you very much.
Any other questions?
What one more?
Dean,
as you know, Thursday they'll be dedicating the Food Innovation Center in Portland, which is truly unique. I believe it's the only agriculture extension operation in an urban setting in the United States, and several agricultural-related activities are part of that. I'm thinking of Portland State University's new management in food processing. Is there any way that the School of Veterinary Medicine could be connected with this Food Innovation Center?
The College of Veterinary Medicine, with the restricted numbers of faculty that we have, is limited to what we can do other than to meet our two service commitments. The college has one extension veterinarian who is involved with the work in principally Eastern Oregon, working with cattle producers. If the funding model for the Veterinary College 677 were to be funded eventually, then the folks that are working in areas of epidemiology and public health would be natural components of the Food Innovative Center in Portland. So I would think as the faculty numbers increase and the breadth of faculty expertise increases, that I believe you'd see College of Veterinary Medicine in every hamlet within the state of Oregon making an impact.
Another question? Last session we had what I think was a very successful partnering with engineering, Senate Bill 504, and we just put $5 million in that, but that sent the message to the high-tech industry that we were serious about it in Oregon State and Portland State and University of Oregon, with in partnering with OGI, doing some magnificent things. Is there any opportunity for private funding or private institutions of veterinary medicine to match what we might do for OSU?
Well, probably not in a financial situation, but in Portland, there is a veterinary emergency hospital called the Doug Lewis Hospital, which some of you may be aware of. And we are looking at producing a cooperative program in emergency clinical medicine for our senior students. This would be a two-week rotation for our students, that they would actually move to Portland for those 2 weeks and spend a week in critical care and a week in emergency critical care. And so there are relationships such as that could be fostered. We also have some of the specialty clinics in Portland where our students have opportunity to rotate through. But most of the private operations of veterinary medicine businesses are for profit, except for WS and OSU, and most of them do not have the resources to contribute to the educational process.
Okay. Thank you.
Just one other question. You had mentioned that it's fairly difficult to get federal monies, especially federal monies, to improve your facilities. Would a change program, a single campus program, a four-year program on your campus make it more possible to get some federal monies?
Well, I believe it would improve our chances to the other 26 veterinary colleges. Most of the veterinary colleges across the United States in the last 15 years have produced significant new improvements in their structure and ability to perform. The increased faculty numbers would improve our prospects for applying for and receiving NIH grants, NIH training grants. Once you have a cadre of successful scientists on board, then you're in a very, very good position to request additional funding for infrastructure. But it's kind of the horse and the cart situation. Right now, we don't have the horses and we can't tie the cart to it. We don't really have the cart, so we can't put the horses to it. But I believe that by doubling our faculty numbers, we would be able to compete. Much would depend on the success of recruiting and recruiting the right people. The state of Oregon, as all of you know, has a lot going for it as far as recruiting and coming to this beautiful part of the world. And I believe we could successfully compete against my alma mater, which is in southeast Alabama, which is hot 8 months a year, and the humidity is out of this world. So I believe our recruitment would be very successful, and we would get the right kinds of people. To further demonstrate that, I would just suggest one looks at Oregon State University as a whole, and Oregon State University is a Carnegie One institution of which there aren't many across the country, and we're not a Carnegie One institution because our salaries are competitive. We're a Carnegie One institution because Oregon State is in Corvallis, which is in Oregon. And so I think it would improve our chances immeasurably.
Thank you, Dean Wilson. We really appreciate it, and we'll have Representative Schrader and Senator Fisher come up together, and we'll hear from them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to back up the testimony that's been given so far. Senator Fisher, Bill Fisher from Roseburg, and I come from an area of the state that we get a tremendous amount of service from the veterinary medical facilities here at Corvallis. People down in my area are far enough away from Corvallis, let alone having to go maybe down to Davis, California, or up to Pullman, Washington to get some help. As a young boy growing up and milking the family cow, we had the unpleasant experience of losing one of our cows and having to drive to Pullman to take the cow there. Under today's situation, if we would have had a Corvallis close at hand, we would have saved the cow. And that's kind of a traumatic experience. Those of you that haven't been raised on the farm, when you lose the family cow and have to see her going downhill and nothing you can do about it, it's not a pleasant experience, even though I can't say milking was my favorite chore. But the animals were basically pets to us, even though they were producing milk for our family. I've had about, nearly 5 years of experience dealing with the problems with the Veterinary College of Medicine at Corvallis, trying to work with it to ride through the situation where it was proposed to perhaps shut it down and then not fund it. Also been involved in the legislature during the sessions that we've had to backfill the thing. I met immediately upon President Risher's appointment to OSU, I met with him and put in my plug for getting the funding for the Veterinary College back in the budget and not leaving it out of the budget. We've been successful in doing that. Again, over a year ago, I met with Dr. Risher and Dr. Ashkenazi and Senator Bryant and myself in a supper meeting, and the thrust of that meeting was getting this year and three quarters up at WSU back down to Corvallis, where I feel it belongs. The legislature was responsible basically for pushing getting the part of the medical facility there, the veterinary medical facility, started. And I think it's incumbent upon us to continue that process and get it up to a full-fledged medical school on its own right. I have a personal feeling, having struggled through college a little bit my own self with my family. Part of it was my own fault because I didn't get it done before. I got married and raised a family, but I know what it's like to have a family and to have to work and study and then have to move, as I did, to a university. At least I didn't have to look once I moved to the university. I didn't have to look to move and again and then back, which would have been an extreme problem. I know of at least one family that maybe this isn't the entire reason that the family broke up, but it certainly was a contributing factor. To me, it doesn't make sense. As I studied and worked in my major field in college, I started out as a freshman. I kind of made my name in the department and advanced working in the department, grading papers and working on projects for the major professor as I was planning to teach myself in that particular field at that time. And had I had to move after my freshman year and lost all credibility that I had, basically, and the touch that I had with my major professor, go somewhere else for a year and three quarters and try to come back then for a year and a part later on, I would have not been able to follow any kind of a real regimen of study or research or anything like that through that process. Also, I would have denied the school the opportunity to see me build and contribute in that process, and I see that happening and being very, very discouraging for the folks that are running the veterinary medicine program there at the college. I see it being a waste of our abilities to solve some of our problems that we have. And believe me, we have some diseases that crop up here from time to time in our animal industries that really need our help, and they need to be worked on immediately. And a freshman student that started out there and established himself could continue on his sophomore, junior, and senior year and build upon that research experience was. Now that's not only his family's upset and uprooted and everything in the process, but so is his research possibilities. His whole learning process is affected by this. So I heartily recommend the fact that we make this a full-fledged Oregon program, and that we get into it now, and we just suck up and do it, and get it done, and make this what it ought to be. And the more we have problems with farming, with animal raising, and the problems with pricing, and our fishery problems, and things like that, we need to draw far more on our land-grant college, which is the Oregon State University, than we're drawing now. The tighter things get, the more we need those the experiment stations, the extension agents and people like that to help our farmers and our ranchers that are having trouble making it go over, because we need to be able to raise better crops easier and more favorable. If we have air pollution problems and things like that, we need to be working on them. We're working on the end-of-flight program and some things like that. We need to increase those things over the broad spectrum of our land-grant issues, because if you look at Oregon, you know good and well that Oregon isn't going to become 99% part of a town over the next period of 100 years or more. It's going to be maintaining country. It's going to be maintaining farms and cropland and things like that, and we need those things badly, and this is an excellent opportunity. Not only that, look at it from a standpoint of economics. Some people have said, well, if we put that money into education and took that many more students in at the undergraduate level, well, I'm going to be here to say that if you did that, you'd be taking an awful lot of students in that are not going there just because of financing. You'd be taking a lot of them in and giving a lot of them a chance to go ahead and flunk out like they would anyway, because most of the people that are willing to go to college and are ready to study and take up that kind of a responsibility are able to manage to get there some way or another. So to spend that kind of money on just putting more people into college that are really not ready to go to college doesn't make any sense. These people come out of the veterinary college with a degree. They're basically ready to go out and set up a business and start hiring other people and adding to the economy. And I know we in Roseburg have been extremely fortunate to get several of the graduates from that program. And my own parents had a dog with a very, very complicated muscle and joint problem, and one of the graduates did a very fine job on their animal, and they came all the way up from California this last time and waited with another dog they have just so they could get back up here, have this veterinarian work on their dog. So they're making their way out there. They're making themselves known and making a place for themselves, even under extremely hard circumstances in their training. So I'm all for it. I hope that you can see your way clear to do this. There's also another thing that I think that we need to look at. We need to get this out of the legislative arena. It needs to take the place of a full-fledged school at the college. And we need to get over this bickering and stuff around the college as far as it's the legislator's pet and this kind of thing, and get this school going and let it operate on its own. And we've got a tremendous faculty down there right now that provide a good basis of doing this. We've got excellent leadership at OSU right now to handle this. A person that, and Dr. Risser, that understands land-grant issues, that was raised on a cattle ranch, wheat farm combination himself, understands what we in Oregon need. And I just would hope that you join with us that have sponsored this bill and bring it about. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Representative Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kurt Schrader. I'm the state representative from District 23, and more importantly, I'm a proud member of the veterinary community, and I've been so for 22 years. I date myself a little because the university wasn't even in operation when I got my veterinary degree, but it started shortly thereafter when I first came to Oregon. This is a real important matter that you have to deal with here. This hopefully starts a process where this legislature, this administration, and the university system of the state of Oregon begins to figure out, okay, what do we want here with our veterinary community? How do we want to build this into the growth and development of our state? The veterinary college is overwhelmingly popular. there were some previous budgets that placed it in a slightly precarious position for one reason or another, and the outpouring of support was just overwhelming. I don't think this legislature has ever seen that sort of crowded hearing rooms overflow on any particular subject with the veterinary school. This is a program that brings urban and rural Oregon together like no other, And that's something we really need in this state as we grow and develop, not just here in the Valley, but in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, Central Oregon. This is something that combines us all together. If we're going to be technologically competitive in this state in the future, we cannot just rely on OHSU to be the source of medical research. We have to have some other institutions, and the veterinary college provides that. There are companies we've heard in previous legislative sessions that moved to Oregon because of vet schools in Corvallis, where they can have access to the university system, to the technology and medical research opportunities that are there. We need to foster that. We need to be credible. At this point in time, the WICHE program was a great start, but as I heard from Dean Wilson and others, it's sort of becoming outgrown. It's almost the 21st century. It's time for the veterinary college to move into that realm. I believe we do have the leadership, as Senator Fisher said. I think we've got the students, and I think we've got the people in the state of Oregon that are ready to do this. The public-private partnership that is being proposed to you is perhaps unique in this country. It's a great way, a great model, that allows large animal and small animal medicine to be pursued here in the state of Oregon, to build careers for young people who will be employing other people. These are almost all future employers. The multiplication effect on our economy is outstanding. The citizens of this state are placing a higher and higher value on their pets and on their livestock. I think you'll see that that's been an increasing economic area as well as a personal companion area as we grow in this state. And it's going to be very, very important that we support that. I think it's one of those situations where you can no longer afford to drive to Pullman, to Fort Collins, Colorado, or down to Davis, California. Those are the three closest vet schools. And that's a sad comment. We're growing. This is an attractive place in this country at this point in time. More and more people are coming here, demanding better service. I, as a private practitioner, cannot provide all the service that my clients now demand. And I rely on the vet school for my tough collar cases, some of the tougher orthopedic cases. I can't do that in my practice, and no one can. I've had friends and colleagues that have tried to establish surgical referral practices, and they can do some things on a limited basis, but we need that vet school. So I hope that the committee would look favorably on this, begin a dialogue this session, perhaps in the interim and next session, where we have a model that we can bring forward that's supported by both urban and rural Oregon. Thank you very much.
Any questions for the administrator? Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Patrick Swindle.
Madam Chairman, committee members, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. They tell us, sir, that we are weak and unable to cope with both formidable and adversary.
Can I interrupt you for just a moment? Would you state your name?
My name is Paxton. I'm sorry. They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be next week or next year? Shall we gather strength from irresolution and inaction? These were words that were spoken by Patrick Henry in March of 1775 before a body of people that was to become the United States Congress. The presentation was entitled The War Inevitable. We are met here today for a very singular and important purpose, that being to establish a firm and reliable foundation for the formation of a four-year program at Oregon State University College of Veterinary Medicine. The question before us today is, why should we, as the people of this state, commit to funding this college? While I cannot speak for others, I will relate to you some of my experience. 4 years ago, I was both honored and I considered it a privilege to have been accepted for the Oregon State University College of Veterinary Medicine degree program for the Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. I knew at the time that the next 4 years would be filled with numerous challenges and hardships. The challenges of a rigorous academic curriculum, the hardships of long hours of study, and the long hours of study that would preclude the ability to work outside of school would thus lead to the increased need for financial aid. Today, I sit here just 12 days away from graduation in the 17th class from Oregon State University. I still consider it an honor and a privilege to have been accepted, and I consider it an honor and a privilege to be entering my chosen profession. The challenges of academics will be replaced by the challenges of private practice. The hardships of long hours of study will be replaced by late nights working on owners' animals and caring for the needs of the owner as well. And the financial burdens that have accumulated over the past 4 years for me personally amount to about $110,000. And that will certainly need to be repaid. And I accept now, as I did then, these same challenges and hardships, and I accept them as being a part of this profession of veterinary medicine. In fact, many of these same challenges are faced by all veterinary students at any school. I am struck, however, by certain differences between students at Oregon State University and those at other veterinary colleges across the United States. For example, when I left to go to Washington State, my youngest son was 2 weeks old. When I returned, he was 2 years old. He cut his teeth, he learned to walk, and he learned his first words. And I was away. Those experiences will never again be replaced. My twins, Molly and Riley, were 2 when I left, and they were 4 when I got home. They went from diapers to dry pants. They increased their vocabulary, and they went from toddlers to young children. I was away, and that time can never be regained. Because of the financial burden that is placed on students to move at least twice, the increased need for financial aid required that my wife stay in Corvallis and keep the job that she had. So that's 2 years of marriage that can never be recovered. This increased financial burden, this lost time and lost experiences, and this increased stress on families is not common across all veterinary students. It is not common, and it is not necessary for Oregon State students. A 4-year program at Oregon State could lead to reduced costs for our students and decreased stress on families of future veterinary students. 17 years of this Washington-Oregon-Idaho arrangement is enough. Just as it had when our country was in its infancy in 1775, the time has come to realize and in fact welcome the inevitable. This legislative body has the opportunity to ensure that no future veterinary students will have to bear the cost of 2 households just to get through vet school. This legislative body has before it the opportunity to ensure that future veterinary students will not have to maintain a marriage by phone, and that future veterinary students will not have to be away when their son or daughter learns to walk. We have a question before us today. I would pose to you another question. If not now, then when? When shall we be stronger? Will we gather strength by irresolution and inaction? Will it be next week, or will it be next year? How many more families must pay this increased price before we realize the inevitable? Appreciate this time, and I would entertain any questions if you have any.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Dr. McCullough?
Get a little hearing aids if you don't always hear your name.
Good morning.
Thank you.
State your name and where you're from for the record.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here for a sure few short moments. My name is Bill McCulloch. I'm a retired veterinarian from Beaverton, Oregon, and I recently retired as Director of Development Emeritus for Doug Lewis Emergency Animal Hospital in Portland, Oregon, that Dean Wilson had talked about as for a potential area for some specialty training in critical care medicine. I think a number of words have already been said. We talk about leveraging, and I'll get right to one bottom line of one of my points that I would like to make in support of this bill and having an on-campus, essentially on-campus four-year program. I spent 30 years in academia after I left practice. I have a master's degree in public health, and I spent it in three different veterinary schools and two medical schools, and not to toot my own horn, but just to show you the leveraging potential of some of the interdisciplinary research that can be pulled off between faculty members coming in here in my best years, I accounted for at least $2 million a year in grant funding personally. One of which is the most recent research program was I was director of a research center between the Texas A&M Veterinary School and Baylor College of Medicine. When you start pulling together and how close we are, even to OHSU and the medical school here, some of the synergism and the leveraging is absolutely phenomenal. I had up to 20 and 30 people were on my grant, and there were physicians and dentists and PhDs and technicians and secretaries, and without that, at least in the states that I was in, I brought money in. So we're talking about having enough critical mass here. We're talking about a leveraging potential that is really quite phenomenal and is being done in other veterinary schools. My most recent veterinary school that I was in has been referred to here before, where I was associate dean for all the veterinary medical programs for Colorado State University in Fort Collins, one of the largest veterinary schools in North America. But I can just tell you the critical mass of research there was important. But on the human side is the other side of the story I want to talk about just a little bit here today that's been alluded to already. And that is, as associate dean at that time, which was about 10 years ago, the student debt load was phenomenal. We had about 97% of the students that came into Colorado State, 60 of which came from out of state through Wichita and 60 from the state of Oregon. Before they got into veterinary school, had $40,000 and $50,000 debt loads. When I think of the debt load and the pressure, and they got to stay in one place to go to school in that sense. But the pressures on these students and the debt load was really phenomenal. And, of course, we're talking about moving students twice back and forth in this regard. I just keep thinking of my daughter was, I was at Leo Busted, who's a retired dean at Washington State University and a friend of mine for 41 years prior to his death. And I came across the old Palouse last September after his memorial service in Pullman. And I can tell you, I just keep thinking if my kids were going to vet school and coming down there in the winter time, down some of which I understand commute on the weekends, actually drive that 400 and some miles coming down through that gorge on icy days, I just think of the potential health and risk and accidents, and I wouldn't want my kids doing that. Well, I can say in the beginning, I'm old enough to say in the beginning almost, I had lens transplants that wouldn't be with cataracts in both eyes I wouldn't have except for the work that we did at Baylor College of Medicine on some phycoemulsion techniques that sucks that old lens out and puts a new one in was done under this research institute that I was involved with ophthalmologists in Baylor College of Medicine, but that was all tied with the vet school, and the veterinarians did the animal model work so that I could see, and I don't know if any of you have ever had or will have cataracts, but I'm very thankful for that. In 1976, I was elected by our House of Delegates as a member of the AVMA Council on Education. So I was on the council from 1976 to 1985. 1977, my dear friend Ed Wedman came into our council and asked for reasonable assurance to start the Washington, Oregon, Idaho program in the Oregon Veterinary School. And during those next 5 years, I traveled through these different groups in Caldwell, Idaho, Moscow, Pullman, and a beautiful campus that you have in Corvallis, Oregon. And one of the things that was a close vote, because this has never been done on the council to split up education like this, and even though it made sense from an intellectual and a budget standpoint at the time, I can tell you my guts were a little churning at the time because of the social and potential family tearing up that we went ahead and voted. It was a close vote on approving it. Since that time, in my experience, since 1977, and now being an Oregon resident for the last 9 years, I can tell you those stresses that I've seen are even more realistic than I even thought at the time. I'm glad we did it because there would be no potential for having this Oregon Veterinary School and a resource. So I think Senator Schrader and others have talked about today. One of the other things that I know from a stress standpoint is I had a late brother, Michael McCulloch, was a psychiatrist in Portland, Oregon. And he was a clinical associate professor of psychiatry at Oregon State up until 1985. And unfortunately, the month after he gave one of his lectures on stress to the Oregon State student, was murdered by a former patient now in prison here in Salem in 1985. And so prior to his death, when we were at Washington State University dedicating one of those many buildings of Leo Bustad Hall in 1985 in April, I can recall my brother telling me when one of the last times he called me after he lectured to Oregon State students of how much stress these students are coming. And just 3 years ago, the associate dean, the former associate dean, now vice president of the AVMA, Norm Hutton, found a folder with evaluation forms. Then basically what these students said is that we only not only need 1 hour, we need to have a full day with my brother just because of some of the family stress and the things that he offered him. So it would be my hope that we could support this program. Just 2 weeks ago, when I do spend part-time still at Dove Lewis on fundraising, in Portland, there was a young technician, or that was his position there at the time, and his first name is Tom. This was just 2 weeks ago, and so I introduced myself and said, I'm the old veterinarian that's kind of hung around here now that I've retired. And he said, well, I'm going to vet school. And I said, fantastic. I said, when do you start at Oregon State? He said, I'm not going to Oregon State. And I said, well, where are you going? He says, I'm going to the University of Minnesota. And I said, well, did you get a letter asking you that you had a spot for Oregon State? Well, yes, I'm 30 and I'm married and I have a family. And even though it's going to cost me more money, I'm going to Minnesota because I will not tear up my family. So we lost a good one, a fine young man, and he probably won't be back. Because you go there and you get opportunities and the like. So my plea is that we do need to think about this long haul. I've been there from the beginning. We did the right thing at the time, even though I was emotionally involved in thinking what it might do to students. And I just hope that this group would look at this as something that's a special resource for the state of Oregon as far as the research and teaching and education it can do to be a truly education and a wonderful profit center for the agriculture and urban industry in this state. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Marilyn Lanier? There's no one. If you'd like to testify, if you want to sign up over here on the sign up sheet so we know how you put testimony.
Good morning, Minister and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marilyn Lanier. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Administration for the Oregon University System. I wanted to start off just briefly to comment that the Oregon University System is justifiably very proud of the Oregon State University Vet Med Program and its obvious contribution to the state of Oregon meeting a critical need. However, in response to Senator Gorley's question earlier, we're not taking a position on this bill, I think, as you probably already know. And the main reason for that is because it's not included in our biennial budget for 1999-2001. So, in other words, it did not go through the process of going to our board, being reviewed, being approved, and being forwarded to the, as an agency request to the governor's office.
That's it, and I understand that part of it, but how does the College of Veterinary Medicine fit into the budget model? That's the piece that I need better understanding of.
Yes, Chairman and Senator Gourley, I can explain, I believe. This year, in this biennium, the funding for the School of Vet Med, the state funding or state general fund, is approximately $4 million or $8 million on a biennial basis. So that's for this biennium. Under the new budget model, what we have estimated is, I'll explain the components of it. As you know, it's an enrollment-driven model or student-driven model. And we have actually developed what we call a special cell outside of just the regular 12-cell template for vet medicine, and this is in recognition of the exceptional cost of the vet med program. So for the professional students attending the program, the dedicated funding would be approximately $35,000 per year per student under the model. In addition, state funds would come in the form of a 3% of the research cost. So there would be additional funding of about $100,000 per year in research support from the state, and another $1.2 million approximately in support from the state in public service funding for the vet diagnostic laboratory. So all of that we're estimating, again, in terms of income derived from the model, there would be approximately $4.9 million per year versus the $4.4 million per year under the current budgetary arrangement. So that difference then is about $900,000 per year more funding under the model using these assumptions. The one thing that I want to point out is that the model funding is designed to fully fund the institution, which includes the academic support costs, things like the student services, facilities management, library, and so forth of the university itself. So as to how much would actually be finally allocated to the program, that would yet to be decided. I mean, as we go through our process, we take the annual budget. Once the legislature approves, first of all, the budget, and we know the final numbers, we would go through a process over the next few weeks of developing the actual budget for the institutions, and then in the end, the universities themselves decide the final allocations to the program.
Representative Ross?
Thank you. Yeah,
that answers the question.
Okay.
Thank you.
I just
wanted to be sure I wasn't interrupting her. Does the Chancellor's Office have a long-term plan to establish a four-year College of Veterinary Medicine at LSU?
Chair Minnis, Representative Ross, at this time we do not have a long-term plan for that.
Senator Gordon?
If I may follow up, why not?
Madam Chair, let me introduce myself. Grattan Sharon, Director of Government Relations for the State System. Marilyn can also comment, I'm sure. The way the budget process works, elements such as this would come forward from the campus. So this is first a campus decision. And if it's not advanced by the campus, then the Chancellor's Office doesn't see it. This was not advanced in this budget round or a portion any time during this decade, given the kind of stress the university system was under. It was not advanced by the campus. It could be in the next round, and in the normal course of affairs, would come as a priority of Oregon State University. Among all the things that they would want to do with the resources available to them in the next biennium, they could then make that as a priority and advance that to the Chancellor's Office. That would then be advanced to the board, to the governor, and then come to you as part of our budget.
And so, Madam Chair, I guess the question that Representative Ross has posed really is a question to pose to OSU as well. What is their long-term view and plan for the college? Do we have an answer to that question?
Madam Chair, I think that's the appropriate place to start, but it's not something that's done in isolation at the campus, and that the chancellor's office or the board or the legislature are simply passive observers of that. Let me speak politically here, if I may, to the committee. The problem in veterinary medicine is the same as in pharmacy and the same as in law. Those are the three outliers in the new budget model that stand outside the normal cells for all the other disciplines that are financed by the model. All three of those are outside or outliers by virtue of their unit costs. So they are extraordinary. Each of those has been under dramatic stress in the last 10, 15 years. Legislation has been introduced to abolish the law school and go to a method whereby those students would be purchased slots outside of state as a means of reducing the large stress that that has. Pharmacy was another one, and this program in veterinary medicine. In pharmacy, the answer was a 94% surtax on tuition in order to pay for that. In law, it was an extraordinary fundraising campaign and full tuition plus charged the students, put it on its own feet. This program has also been addressed by the legislature innumerable times during the last 24 years in order to secure its place and to advance it. It will again be advanced in the normal course of the implementation of this model, but the larger question lies outside of that. And it becomes a extraordinary budget and thus policy question for everybody involved. It begins at the campus, but you have to make the choice also in this legislature or some future legislative session about allocation of those resources. The problem has been, in all three of those outliers, is that the support for the system itself has been anemic. And to allocate extraordinary funds to the highest unit cost programs while further steaming the blood of the university system itself is something that you did not do in past legislative session. That is going to change now. And so I would suggest that this is something that does begin at the campus level, but is something that each of you and the sponsors and the university system itself has a part to play in.
What you're saying is that you may come and make a proposal to the legislature and then ultimately it'll be up to us whether to fund those pieces in the model. Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chair, I think that it begins on the campus. Senator Gordon is correct. The question begins at Oregon State University, but is also directed to all the others. Our hope would be that the same kind of a cooperative venture here as we have been able to do in some other areas. Senator Hartzog referenced the matching process, which we are now going through in engineering and high technology, which we are doing in the Oregon Metals Initiative, and other areas might be applied here. Because even with the new funding, which will come under the new budget model, you will still not have achieved the world-class higher education system you want. And again, those marginal dollars will be rare and be hard to capture. A matching system and a commitment from the industries affected and benefited would have to be part of that mix too. I would ask the question to them also.
There are always differences of opinion about what is most valuable to the state and what's most valuable to an industry. And there was, in past sessions, there's been this difference of opinion between the governor, who looked at the overall benefit to the state and said, well, the state of Oregon can continue to import our veterinarians, and we don't actually, the veterinary school is not critical to the health of the state. And that view was not held, was not shared by the livestock industry, the veterinary profession, or the members of this legislature. And so the legislature has in the past chosen to fund the veterinary school, even though it was not in the scheme of things for some policymakers. If, now there are a couple of, about three choices. One is the legislature could throw this proposal in the can, forget it. Another is we could fully fund the $8 million and take responsibility for the costs that are coming up. And that may in fact happen because there's a lot of support for the veterinary school in this body. People love it. And it's a good institution and, you know, people just like it. They understand it and they like it. If neither of those choices are chosen, then we would have to think about some path to go down that was a responsible kind of study, a responsible step in that direction, and direction from the legislature to the chancellor's office and to the school to study alternatives for funding and ongoing costs to put some money into improvement of the facilities and programming, but probably short of the $8 million. And so as there's a dialogue with the leadership and which of those three choices is chosen, I hope they'll be an actor in helping us to be responsible and coming to whichever alternative is chosen. That was another question.
Right. You got funding for a question, but it didn't happen.
Let me say, would you be willing to help us in examining those alternatives?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, University System would be a partner in that and understands that. Let me tell you from personal experience, there is a memorial working its way through this legislature honoring the late State Representative Bob Beyer, who in 1975 was the godfather of the Veterinary Medical College at Corvallis. He was joined by Senator Trowe and
Representative Magruder.
And Representative Magruder, the late Representative Magruder, and others. It is something which has always been very popular with this legislature. I can tell you from personal experience, having had the unfortunate duty of representing the Oregon University System and the governor's budget, which wanted to cut, after failing twice to cut all of the money out for this program, chose to fund only half of it, which was a rather unique approach to budgeting. Following that experience, I went, got my knee pads out, went to the governor's office and to John Yonker and said, please, 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 never put us in that situation again. There's nothing worse than being in the room, having to spend that kind of budget when there are pygmy goats and other small animals here and a llama parade around the Capitol. That's a no-win situation for the chancellor's office, let me tell you. But having said all that, it is an extraordinarily high-cost program. The unit cost is very large. Under the proposal, you would approximately double the cost at no net new students, as I understand it, and that's a terrific investment. Both it would be terrific in the program, but also a very large investment. And that's something that needs to take the work of the campus itself and its leadership, the university system, this legislature and the governor, and the industry that seeks that investment in order to find a way through to a satisfactory solution.
Any other questions? Any comments?
No, Chairman of the committee, I agree we would work with you in any way we can to go through the process and reach hopefully a successful outcome.
Thank you very much.
I would just like to say that one of the comments I heard earlier, and I think it was Representative Schrader, said that this is a program that brings urban and rural Oregonians together. And that's very appealing to me. And I know that there's a great deal of concern about the high cost of the program and all of the reasons for that. I hope that we could find another way of framing the issue. For me, it's what are the benefits? What are the benefits to the students, like Mr. Trudeau, who spoke to us, and who's going to be graduating soon. I'm assuming you're going to be setting up your business in Oregon. You're not going to Washington or California. Here. So what are the benefits? What are the benefits to the students, and what are the benefits to all of Oregon? And then what are we willing to invest in those benefits? So I hope, if we go down the path that Representative Ross is suggesting, that we look at reframing the issues and the questions.
Any other comments? That must all put note for the first public hearing. And we are adjourned. I want to remind everybody tomorrow to be sure we have a work session on OHSU.
OHSU.
OHSU.